Wrestling Omakase brings you a full-course meal of all of Japanese wrestling, men's and women's. Join me, a Japanese wrestling fan for over 20 years, along with a rotating cast of equally knowledgeable co-hosts, as we cover everything from New Japan and Stardom to NOAH, All Japan, DDT, Tokyo Joshi, Marigold, Sendai Girls, Dragon Gate, Gleet, Ice Ribbon, and even more stuff. If you're a fan of Japanese wrestling and you want coverage of the entire scene in one podcast, check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network each and every week. Get us wherever you get podcasts today.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you brought your A-game. A-man, no rain.
Hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
I like the new logo. I think I need to make a new video. I think I need to make a new intro video to kind of match it now. I was just thinking that as we were listening. I'll take care of that this week. I've been better. How are you?
I'm actually doing really good. I'm a little fatter than the last time we talked because I ate so much today for Easter.
Dude, my mother-in-law made a key lime cheesecake. It was freaking fantastic. It was freaking fantastic. It was so good. As am I, and I got to get my weight down for the next 2 weeks. So we'll just rip this Band-Aid right off right now. Yesterday, I forget where I was, but I get an email. I was with family. I was doing something, and I get an email from Twitter, X, saying that it's at the Olive Garden with my wife and kid for dinner. I'm an Italian, that could get me in a lot of trouble.
I was about to say, did you really go to Olive Garden? That's
the boy requested it. He goes, can we go to the Olive Garden? And I'm like, we haven't done that in a long time. Sure. Let's go to the Olive Garden. And I'm literally sitting at the Olive Garden and I get an email from X saying, you have changed your home email address. If you haven't done that, do this, go here. So I do. And I'm locked out.
Oh my God.
I'm locked out of my Twitter. And then, I got the vibe that I had been hacked, so I text you and our good buddy John Muse, and I'm like, hey guys, I think I got locked out of my Twitter. And Muse immediately shows me that whoever has pirated my Twitter, when you try to recover stuff, they want the email and the username. This homie changed the email and the username.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Twitter's like, we have no record of you having ever existed. Because I don't think Twitter's actually people anymore. I think Grok just runs the whole thing. I think you're just talking to a chatbot. So, I don't have a Twitter anymore. Long story short, Muse informed me that I'm now, my account is now following nobody. So even if I got it back, it would just be useless. So I think it's time to pull the thing behind the shed and shoot it like old Yeller. Which disappoints me because I had a lot of really positive experiences on Twitter early on. I found my way into comics because of Twitter. The comic experience, it literally was I found it on Twitter. I got into wrestling again from Twitter. I met a bunch of people from the wrestling world from being on Twitter. You and I became friends on Twitter. And it's devolved into a sociopathic hellhole full of goose steppers. But I still liked it. It was still my favorite form of social media.
It's stupid, but it can be fun. You know,
I know it is. And it is and I'm like, damn it. And I have been looking at it less and less lately, but now that I can't look at it, it's I could build a new one, but I mean, I had it since 2009, man. Yeah. That's a long time. So
I wish I still had access to my account, my original account that I created in 2009. But after a while I had to just delete that thing because my podcast account had outgrown my regular. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I'm allergic to Twitter talk, I guess, but so I ended up getting rid of the one that I had in 2009 and just completely cooked it because I created my old Podcast Express account. I created that and I just had way more followers on there. So I just kind of like made that my own personal account. But it's so funny. So you texted me and you were like,
hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Can you do me a favor? I was like, sure, JD. Like, hey, can you tweet out that I've been hacked and to not, nobody should interact with my account? And I was like, you know what? That's a good friend thing to do. I will do that. So I do that for you. And I say, I said, hey, everybody, JD's account's been hacked. Don't interact with it. Okay. And I was like, that's a good friend thing to do.
I really appreciated it, Mike. I mean, like, you're the first person. I'm like, cause I knew something. I don't think I clicked on anything. Andy plays my phone a lot. Maybe he accidentally clicked on something. Like, I don't know what happened. So I just wanted the word out. Like, if you got anything for me, it's bad. Stay away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who else can I trust with this?
You. Well, and it would make sense that the host of the Mike and JD show would announce that JD's Twitter has been hacked, right? And for whatever reason, someone sent that tweet that I made and sent it over to the other JD, the guy from New York. And he then, he quote tweets and said, what the fuck are you talking about? I have not been hacked. The funny thing is like, I don't follow him. I've never interacted with that guy. I've literally never seen his show. I've never heard his voice before. I don't know what it sounds like. The only reason I know what his face looks like is because I looked it up today for thumbnail purposes, because we're going to clip this part. I made a clickbait YouTube thumbnail designed to play off of his popularity, because he is really popular. I have to admit, I think he's got like, over 100,000 subscribers on YouTube or something like that. The guy's got insane numbers. And I'm not going to say that he's good, bad, or indifferent. I've literally never heard a show. I know a lot of people don't like the guy, but then there's a lot of people that do. I got attacked because I was just starting a rumor that he had gotten hacked. And so a bunch of fucking skanks came after me, calling me names. And I was like, I'm talking about JD from Chicago, not JD from New York. And then like, I actually got one person to apologize, because they called me the R word. they called me essentially a slow adult, but used the word
that I used on this show a few weeks ago. Got me in trouble. Coincidentally.
It blew up. It became a whole thing. And then, so sure enough, me, I can't leave well enough alone. I had to screenshot it and tweet it out, because I wanted everybody to know. It's like, look, not only was I not talking about this guy, it's weird that he thinks that I was, because we've never met. We've never talked. I've never listened to his show. I've never tweeted the guy. I know who he is. I'm not an idiot. I mean, the guy's popular, but he's just not somebody that I'm interested in. So I've just never like was a part of that orbit. And sure enough, he sends a bunch of fucking skanks after me, because they said that I was saying that he was hacked and he was not hacked. So that became a whole deal. But he ended up, the funny thing is he took the tweet down, and then he said that, well, maybe Mike should clarify who he's talking about. I'm like, motherfucker, you are not the only dude in this world named JD.
You see, here's what pisses me off, is that's my real fucking name. That guy just says it. His name is Jerry or some shit. Like, I am, this is who I am. Like, I have my own brand. Thank you very much. Yeah. Like, I do my
JDOliva.com.
Yes.
Like, multiple books.
Multiple time best Amazon best-selling author. Go fuck yourself. Like, here's what pisses me off about this whole thing, is that I've expressed this on our show numerous times, that I hate being the other JD. Because we are not part of the grifter sphere. You and I have gone above and beyond to make sure that we are who we are, right?
Yeah.
We could have easily steered in, especially when we left Fight Game. We could have easily turned up the super toxic notch and probably made a shit ton more money if we had just steered right at that and just been one of those guys. But we didn't, because it's not us. And the fact that we have to get looped into this shit, now I have to like think about that guy.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah. And I lost my Twitter. What the fuck?
Well, so not only did he think that it couldn't have possibly been anybody else but him. It's like, not only are you JD, he goes by JD. There's a wrestler in the WWE who goes by JD, JD McDonald's or whatever the fuck his name is, the rapey guy from Ireland, that guy. And then there's also our fat vice president. He goes by JD.
JD Drake?
JD Drake is also a guy. There's lots of JDs out there. I just don't understand why he could have possibly thought that he was the one that I was talking about. It could have been anybody else. I had to have been talking about the guy from New York. Now my fucking podcast co-host, the co-host of the Mike and JD show. Like, that couldn't be who I'm talking about. I had to be talking about this motherfucker. Now I'm on my podcast talking about some dickhead from New York City. I don't even like that city. Actually, I do. It's a nice city. Sorry. But now I'm just being a dick.
Isn't our show in your byline of your Twitter page, which I could tell you, yes. But I don't have Twitter anymore, so I can't look it up myself.
It literally says I'm the host of the Mike and JD show and brace for impact. So this fuck face had no idea that I wasn't talking about him and then wants me to clarify because I have to be more specific about the JDs that I'm
clarify this.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of people that were commenting and they were, you know, making fun of that guy, saying a lot of mean things about him.
Oh, so good. Like,
yeah, it's good. So a lot of people, you know, I only had a few JD from New York skanks come after me, but I think I got a lot of people defending me and they all got blocked. Yes. The Ryan Frederick got blocked. Chad Schultz got blocked. Chad also very sad because you DM'd him and he thought it was real.
What am I talking about, dude?
Fuck. Yeah. So where's Blake's in the chat? Blake, actually, he just DM'd me a screenshot. I'm going to have to text it to you after the show's over. But he screenshotted the hacker. He said, he goes, I'll click the link if you send me nudes. And then the hacker starts talking shit back to him.
I need to see that. Yes. This guy's going to fucking ruin my life.
I texted that to you.
The best you text me back was Rovert. I don't know. Like, apparently I had Rovert blocked.
Yeah, Rovert replied and he said, tell both JDs to unblock me. And I said, you have a better shot with the fake JD. Cause I just assumed you're mad at him for some reason. Cause he likes to shitpost.
He does like to shitpost, and shitposting annoys me. So like I had no clue I even had that guy blocked, to be honest
with
you.
That's so funny. David Dixon's response. David Bixisband DM'd me because right after he saw my tweet, he got the message from fake JD to click the link. And then he immediately got another message from Brian Gewirtz, the same one, because the same person that hacked you hacked Brian Gewirtz. So he's going after it.
Yes. He's going after wrestling people, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another one. It was PWO Loss. There was another one, wrestling playlist DM'd me. And it was the same thing. Yeah. I got that from Wrestling Playlist. Like, please vote for my Spotify podcast. The guy's hacking everybody. I don't know what's going on.
Well, explains why I got a Facebook friend request from David Bixisband today.
Yeah, because he probably wants to talk to you now.
That's good. I like Bix. Yeah. I mean, I think Bix is a great guy. Phenomenal podcast host.
Yeah. Well, he's been under the weather lately. He needs to get back to work. Hopefully he feels better though. For sure.
I am going to message Bix on Facebook and not on Twitter. To check out how he's doing. So this was a whole kerfluffle. Dude, I had no idea I was going to get you into a feud with the asshole from New York. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. It's almost
worth it. Yeah. So, I did have a good time on that last night. That was pretty funny. Let's see. Let's get to the chat real quick. We do have BJ Bethel coming in. Let me actually check my messages to make sure that he's still coming. He said that he would be on about 10:15. Let's see.
About that time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He should be on any minute now. He's gonna. JD and I, we were going to talk about the new Vince stuff, but I'll be honest, we're too stupid to give everybody good details. So we're bringing on BJ.
I got my Twitter hacked. Should anybody be listening to me about anything important ever?
Yeah. So let's
clearly
get to the chat.
I'm a moron.
Yeah, let's get to the chat. Darce Boy. So tune in to see if Mr. Gilbert is wearing that sweet shirt. So you missed out on this, JD, because this is a Twitter thing. So I went to TeePublic and they have a bunch of Bruiser Brody shirts.
Oh,
so I bought a Bruiser Brody shirt. It says Bruiser Brody Japan. It's just a nice looking shirt, and it's, you know, celebrating, you know, an amazing wrestler and about his Japanese run. So I buy the shirt and I'm excited. It gets in the mail today. I go down to the mailbox in the fucking rain because I want to wear that shirt on this show tonight. I open the thing up, and on the t-shirt it says, it says, smash the patriarchy with a hammer. Like, what the hell is this? I was like, I'm so pissed. I was like, I wanted to wear my new Bruiser Brody shirt. This is Smash the Patriarchy. I was like, what kind of bullshit is that?
I would love to see you wearing a Smash the Patriarchy.
You know what? Hold on. I'm not going to put it on because I don't believe in that. That's just some beta male tryhard bullshit. You know, but everybody knows my wife runs the house, and like, I don't have a say in any goddamn thing. Here, let me. I'll just go grab the shirt real quick. I just have to show it to you. Talk please, amongst yourselves. I'll just
talk amongst yourselves about what a fucking idiot I am. Oh Lord. I'll pull this up real quick. Oops, wrong one. This is the one I wanted. Did JD from NY demand that JD Oliva be JD from Illinois from now on? I don't want to be JD from Illinois. I just want to. This is the problem. It's like there's a million Mikes. Mike can be Mike, right? But if I go by my actual name that I've had since birth, my name is James Daniel Oliva, JD. Like my mommy been calling me that since I was born. If I do that, then I get loped in with some dipshit who doesn't even call himself JD. Fucking A. I see Mike's got that Nirvana shirt on. Part of me wonders if I should go get a Pearl Jam shirt and wear that.
Yeah, PacSun has a new line out of old school boxy style t-shirts. So I got a Nirvana shirt, and I got a Rocky IV shirt from PacSun. Yeah, it's pretty cool. So I'm like redoing my entire closet. My wife hates my clothes. So she's like, you need all new clothes. They all have sweat stains in them. So
my wife has informed me that we need to have a t-shirt draft. And she figured out that 92% of my shirts have the word wrestling written on it. Let me see.
Oh,
that.
Yeah. Hold on. It was upside down. Hold on. It says smash the patriarchy.
It's not even a good design.
No, it's terrible. It's T Public. I upload designs there. Go to our T Public store. I have Brace for Impact shirts. I have new ones out with the NWO logo, but it says BFI. You should wear that with pride, sirs. But yeah, it was
actually you should make a shirt with a new logo. Actually, that'd be a good looking. I'd wear that.
I have a transparent version of that shirt. So yeah, for sure, we could do that.
Let's get on. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, no, I wasn't about to wear that shirt. I was just like, you know, not doing that. Canelo Lake, hello, corporate Mike and crew. What's up, my friend?
I'm crew.
This guy. Yeah, JD's part of the crew. I'm guessing he's talking about Olive Garden. That's like going to Taco Bell for authentic Mexican food.
Which I explained to the boy. It's like, yeah. He's like, well, Dad, we're Italian. I said, yeah, but we can't like admit it that we went to an Olive Garden. That's like what I said. It's like our Mexican, his best friend is Mexican. So that's like your best friend going to Taco Bell. For Mexico, he's like, but he loves Taco Bell. I'm like, yeah, everybody does, but that's not, we don't talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Or going to Panda Express for Chinese food. And I'm like, well, I get it, but it's still good.
Right. Exactly. Same with the Olive Garden. Like, you're supposed to, I'm an Italian. So do I. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. I'm not proud of it, but I do. Sean Cedor, what's up, sir? Happy Easter. Twitter's in the mud for sure. Let's see. I got one of my haters, Keep It Wilson. So why couldn't it have been Mike's account that got hacked?
Because Mike is smarter than me. That's why.
I immediately changed my password as soon as JD got hacked. So because I was like, you are not getting me. You're not getting me today. Lady B is in the house. Meanwhile, I assume Mike was just trolling about the hack because that's a pretty good guess, actually. That is something I would do. But
that is 100% something you would do.
Yeah, for sure. JD from Chicago is greater than JD from New York. I was talking to Joel Pearl and I said that I should start calling you JD from Indiana because the Bears left
Chicago. Oh, fuck you. Fuck you. Six ways to Sunday.
Look, and here's Gerard chiming, JD from Indiana cheering for the soon Indiana Bears. He's a bigger Bears fan than you, by the way, Gerard. Well,
I'm fully aware of that. But he actually lives in Indiana, right?
I think he lives in Chicago.
No, I think Gerard actually lives in Indiana. But from Indiana claim, like people from Northwest Indiana claim Chicago because why would you want to claim living in Indiana?
It's probably a guy that lives in Lake Wylie, South Carolina, claiming Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Because I work in Charlotte. So, yeah. Okay. Mike's a grifter. What are you talking about? And no one actually watches TNA. Hey, sir, 250,000. Apparently, according to Joe Lanza, brain dead motherfuckers listen to watch
their takedown of TNA. Like, they always so mention you so respectfully, and then
they're like, Mike is great. Everybody except for Mike and Garrett, right? Like, it's just that they always say that. It's like they're all assholes and fuck faces except for Mike and Garrett. I'm just like, who would actually do this? The funny thing is Joe Lanza watches every week.
I know. It's hilarious.
Like Rich is like a principled human. He just refuses to watch. But Joe Lanza, he's like, I must do this for the sake of the Patreon. So
well, Rich is like me. He's like, I can't watch this shit. That's how we got here. But yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. Okay. All right, let me get BJ Bethel's in the green room. We're gonna get to him in just a sec. Let me get a couple more of these in here.
We gotta laugh because when BJ comes on the show, it's not gonna be funny anymore.
It's no offense, BJ, but he's not bringing good news.
Right,
it's all dark. Jeremy finds strong evidence. You guys are idiots. Oh. Yeah. We need fucking Finestone to explain this whole Callum Newman thing to me, because I don't know why Yoda Tsuji lost the IWGP title. I know they're trying to build a guy, but it seems early.
It does seem early, but it's like with Okada, dude. The first time Okada won the belt, he lost it pretty quick. Yeah, that's what, I mean, they will do this stuff, and I think they actually got a chance to make Callum Newman over there, and New Japan's actually kind of interesting for a bit.
They're kind of coming back a little bit. They had to take a few steps back, but...
Dude, I like the Dragon Daya signing. Dragon Daya is really good if you never pay attention to Dragon Gate. Like, this is actually got some stuff going on in New Japan right now.
Yeah. All right. A couple more. Okay. Bobby Axelrod says, JD Jerry has nothing on you. He's a former sales associate who just happened to jump on the content making wave and created a niche. You should challenge him one-on-one in freestyle wrestling. That wouldn't go good for the New Yorker.
In freestyle, he might have a shot, but in Greco, I'm okay. I feel comfortable there.
I don't think that guy's got an athletic bone in his body. I've never, okay, look, I say that knowing that I've never actually seen the guy in person, but, let's see. If I order the new BFI shirt, I'll probably get sent the Smash the Patriarchy shirt. If you order the new BFI shirt, I will mail you the Smash the Patriarchy shirt.
Mike. You have to do something with this Smash the Patriarchy shirt. We have to restyle this, like Smash the Patriarchy BFI. Like, we have to rebrand it and sell it on our own. Like, we have to steer into the skid. There's something here.
Yeah. Okay. We got to get to BJ Bethel. He is patiently waiting in the green room. BJ Bethel, a veteran reporter, sescoops.com, and various legitimate news organizations. He's been covering one of the biggest stories in all of entertainment for a long time, and he's here to talk about it today. What's the latest with Afro Man, BJ?
Afro Man. Lick It Low Lisa is still not recovered. She's still crying on the stand.
You went straight from looking low, Lisa.
Well, jokingly, this is how my life goes. I worked at a TV station in Cincinnati when his house got raided.
Wow.
And so you get to typical, we get the press release from the Adams County Sheriff's Department, you know, such and such foreman, known as professionally as Afro Man. His house was raided on suspicions of, what was it? I think drugs and... kidnapping was that one of the thing and things like that, and when all this goes, it's funny because you can tell law enforcement has a way of really stilting things for their own way in press releases. And within 2 days, we get the "Will you fix my door?" video, and I'm like, "Oh, this guy's gonna mess them up bad," because you deal with small town cops, and I've seen a lot of them. I'm like, oh, they have no idea what they walked into. They thought they were going to go in this dude's house because he just played right. This is something a lot of people don't know. He just done Red Rocks that week before. So I think they raided thinking he was going to have a ton of merch cash in there from the Red Rocks concert. And it didn't happen. But yeah, Afro Man, it's funny. I can't find anybody who thinks that Afro Man's the bad guy in that. But
that he was the one guy that actually, for like a small moment of time, unified the country together.
Yeah,
he's like sticking it to the government. You know,
he's awesome. I was also shocked. Like the guy was because I got high. Song guy lives in Cincinnati. Why? You know, it's like, what's he doing here?
Have you ever tried to fill up your car with gas in Palmdale, California? It's much cheaper outside of Cincinnati, I assure you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Ohio's a great place to live. You know, regardless, you know, that's one of the insults I get flung at me all the time. So, you're from Ohio, what do you know? I'm like, well, okay, whatever. But at least fault, you know, I'm not paying $7,000 a month to live in a, you know, shoebox. Okay.
Well, so it's not your fault. It's because the other JD, not the one from New York, not the one from Chicago, but the one from Ohio, is our vice president. He gets he's kind of a dipshit.
He is. I actually met him once. And let me tell you something. This is what I know about the JD from Ohio is that, you know how there's groups of nerds and there's always the big nerd who like bullies and uses, he's the first one to use slurs against the other nerds and punches them in the yard all the time. And you know, but when somebody from outside the group comes around, they kind of shriek in terror. That's JD Vance. Yeah, that was him. He kind of grew up in a basement with a hoodie and, you know, bullied the other nerds. And, you know, now he's vice president of the United States.
Well, what a country. It's great.
Wonderful. So the real reason
why we brought you on, although we were talking about Afroman a couple weeks ago, I was like, we should have just brought on BJ because he actually covered the story for a little bit.
God, it was it's a wonderful story. It's such an amazing story. If you've dealt, anyone that's dealt with, had to deal with, I mean, I don't know. You guys, Chicago, San Francisco, I don't know, Mike, where you're originally from, but if you've lived in the small towns, they're the crooked small town police departments, law enforcement, government. That's a huge problem. You know, the guy who sings that "Don't Try That" in a small town song, he doesn't get to that part in the song. So Afroman was just awesome. It's just like, okay, this is what they deserve. They deserve this times 10.
Yeah. But, so the real reason we brought you on is there has been a big update in the case, the Janelle Grant case against Vince McMahon, WWE, and TKO. Some new evidence has come to light. So why don't you go ahead and let us know what that new evidence is and like, and what this actually means for the case.
I wouldn't call it new evidence, but there's been new allegations.
Yes.
So the big ones, so she made a 40-page declaration filing, which was in support. So in June, they're going to have a hearing to decide whether her case should stay in civil court or it should move to arbitration. This is because she had signed a non-disclosure agreement. Yeah. Sorry, it's late. Non-disclosure agreement, and in there is if there was any kind of issues with her and the agreement or WWE and Vince McMahon, she would immediately go to arbitration to discuss this. Well, that's what WWE and Vince McMahon wants her to do, because obviously that would go to their forum with their lawyer, with their format, and then she would have to discuss with them why, you know, it's just nonsensical to me, because she's not talking about anything with an NDA. She's talking about sex assault and sex trafficking. But anyway, her declaration was in support of this opposition to arbitration. She wants to keep her case in court, right? So the big revelations from her side, anyway, the allegations that came out, Nick Khan, who obviously he's the president of WWE, he's kind of the big guy there now. He knew about her and Vince, according to Grant. Nick Khan knew about their relationship pretty much from his time beginning in WWE. She considered that like one of the worst days for her. It's when things really went downhill for her. And then also that she says that Vince forced her into relationships with other multiple WWE talent, which means not just Brock Lesnar,
right,
but others. I can't tell you for a fact when they're talking about the February 14th Raw show that she was invited to. This is after she'd signed the NDA, and this has been discussed on Twitter quite a bit. But that the talent that Vince wanted her to meet up with for a liaison, so to speak, was not Brock Lesnar, even though he was on that show. It was somebody else.
So she's alleging that there's a talent that has not been named and that she will not be naming that was a part of the February 14th. What year was that?
2022.
February 14th, 2022 Raw, that that he was trying to get her to have sex with, essentially, as part of them having a good performance on Raw, right?
You should help this talent celebrate. You know, I'm trying to think of a Vince voice, but it's a harrowing read. I mean, she talks about suicide attempts. It gets into some of the nastiness of the relationship with her, Vince, and Johnny Laurinaitis. She basically says you know, Laurinaitis and McMahon raped me on these occasions, and she's listed, making a list of it. And, you know, there's just times where she was blacking out. She'd made a suicide attempt at one point. She had suicidal thoughts, it seemed like, throughout this entire relationship, which was probably around 3 years. That seemed to really kind of culminate badly with the pandemic. You know, she goes into reasons why she didn't want to sign the NDA, which the whole process of that, if it's, you know, if what Janelle's alleging is true with the NDA, it's just absolutely absurd that this would hold in court.
Yeah, because she's alleging that she was essentially pressured into signing the NDA, so that makes it invalid. Now, she has to prove that she was being pressured and what kind of pressure that was, but she'll have her day in court, hopefully, if it doesn't go to independent arbitration. So right now what they're trying to do is the WWE Vince TKO side is trying to force it into kind of a private arbitration, but she wants to have more of a public hearing with like an actual judge and jury, as opposed to just like an independent arbiter, like that's just in front of a single judge, right? That's the crux of what we're seeing right now.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. The hearing for them to see if they go to arbitration or not is June 16th. That'll be in federal court in Stanford. That was the crux of it. There was a lot of information. I mean, just tons. I got an article for SE Scoops coming out. Because of computer problems, I didn't get to write it last week, but I got something that's going to be coming out tonight or tomorrow morning. It's already written. It's about 1,800 words. And it's just me going through her talking about the NDA, some of the other stuff that popped up. A lot of it doesn't even get back into previous allegations that were crazy, like the designed office that they had where, you know, Vince and Johnny Laurinaitis would have been able to, enter her office at any time when no one else was around or be able to see what was going on. Nick Khan was supposedly in charge of designing that and making sure it got constructed. But the stuff from this new declaration, its affidavits, just it's very harrowing. It really makes the decision. I mean, there's a lot about Brock Lesnar that also comes out in this too. He tried to get her to fly to Chicago to meet up with him one time. There was multiple times where he was trying to get her to meet up. He allegedly sent Janelle, shots of his body with the photos and stuff. It just shows you how stupid it was the WWE to bring, or TKO. I honestly think that was a TKO decision, not a WWE decision. But to bring him back last year, I just think it was a dumb decision. He doesn't wrestle every week. He doesn't do much. He's not really the draw he was, you know. And I mean, every time he's on TV, some hero on the hard cam, you know, opposite of the hard cam, as a sign says, Brock Lesnar shouldn't be here, and everybody knows why. It's just a mess. It was rough stuff reading and reporting, but you know, someone's got to do it.
Well, it was a rough week for WWE last week overall, creatively speaking, and like part of it was having that uncomfortable, which I watched this on replay and Twitter before I got taken away. Cody Rhodes and Stephanie McMahon were basically essentially speaking well of Vince like he was some kind of a folk hero. Like it just I don't think they take this thing seriously at all. Like I see Chad Schultz in the chat saying, why don't they just settle this?
Well, I don't think they would like to
settle. Yeah, she doesn't want it settled.
Yeah. Trust me. They trust me, TKO, WWE, and Vince. And I say all three on purpose. It's not just Vince. And I think that everybody sees this as a Vince problem, but it is not a Vince problem, like solely a Vince problem. This is a problem for all three. And they would love to settle this thing. And that's what this whole case is about, because she wants it to go to an actual jury and he wants it to go to independent arbitration. If it goes to a jury, she has a bigger opportunity to get more, right? But if it's an independent arbitration, it narrows the scope, which is why Vince would like it to go there. Now, if she goes in front of a jury, the whole case can get blown wide open and it could go really bad for her too. At the same time, so she's really taking a risk, but she feels like she probably has enough evidence on her side, which is why she'd be willing to do that.
Yeah. Discovery is going to be an interesting thing if that does happen. So
that was another thing
that was filed too. That was filed the day after. See, I haven't got through all this, but two of them I have. But there was four or five filings made on April 1st. That was the deadline for them to finish their opposition to the arbitration filing. And then the next day they filed asking for a discovery for the arbitration case. And a lot of it was based off of, you know, hey, there's been new discovery in the shareholder suit that pertains to our case. We want to be able to use that in the arbitration hearing. WWE and, you know, Vince, they don't want them to be able to do discovery. If you remember back, I think it was last year, maybe 2 years now, I can't remember, but when they got to this stage before and they were getting ready to do an arbitration hearing and Janelle asked for discovery for the hearing, that's where the Department of Justice stepped in and said, no, we don't want you to do that because that's going to interfere with a criminal investigation. Can you stay the suit? Then we got the 6 month stay. That was in 2024. That went till January. And then, you know, curiously enough, around the time the Trump administration came in, all of a sudden that case just kind of disappeared, the criminal case against Vince. So, it, you know, I think that what happens from here, I thought if this was going to get settled, it would have been settled by now, because right now both sides are on kind of equal terms, right? Yeah. Once this arbitration hearing happens, that changes significantly, because if Vince and WWE win and they have arbitration instead of a court case, they're going to have much more leverage than Janelle has. If Janelle wins and they go to court and they manage to continue this in court, and she said all along, you know, everybody says this all along in civil cases. Yeah, I want to go all the way. I want to go to trial. I want my story told. Well, then they settle. That's how you have to do it. Honestly, I think Janelle kind of wants to go all the way. She wants to go to trial. She wants to put people on the stand. She wants people to have to talk about what happened to her.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sense that I've gotten from this, probably more so than I have in usual civil cases that I've covered. But that's where they're at. I think that if they're not going to settle, if they haven't settled by now, and there's still a chance for them to do something by June 16th, which is when the arbitration hearing happens. But if there isn't a settlement between now and then, I'll be very shocked if there is one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because if they go to a jury trial, and I got to give a shout out to Gerard. He did remind me of something. I'm going to try to piece this together. So the terms of the NDA were that it goes to arbitration, but that should have been, he meant voided when Vince failed to continue paying on it. He corrected it in a later part of his comment. And I think that's also part of the argument that Janelle Grant was making, is that not only should it not have been held up because of the way that the reason why I signed it, how I signed it, but they stopped paying on it.
She only discusses the one payment in the declaration. She got $1 million payment like about maybe a week or two after she signed the NDA. It may have been a few days, but there was never any payments made again after that, which I've heard has happened in cases of WWE NDAs before. But that, there's a fight on both sides over who voided the NDA. Vince's side claims that Janelle did it, maybe with a civil action. Janelle's side say that Vince voided it when, when he wasn't continuing to pay the installments. And a wrestling reporter, I think everybody knows his name, but I can't remember specifically who it was. But wrestling reporter, they leaked to the wrestling reporter who Janelle was and what was happening. And that got out. So that broke the NDA. There's also another thing with this, with the NDAs and people understanding arbitration grievances. There's been federal legislation passed where you cannot use NDAs. You can't use arbitrations to kind of cover up for sex harassment, sex trafficking, assaults like this. Now the Vince's side, Rosenberg, Jessica Rosenberg, is a very high profile, very talented attorney. You know, they're arguing that, you know, well, that doesn't really, those federal laws are meant for when you go to orientation, when it is a new hire and you sign a form saying, if you get in a fight with the company over pay or something else or an injury dispute, you have to go to arbitration. And, Janelle's side say, no, that's not true. We believe this means that it calls for anything involving sexual harassment, sexual assault, you know, sex trafficking involving a business, that if it's an NDA or an arbitration, then, you know, that's you can't do an NDA to try to cover it up. You can't try to move it to arbitration to keep it out of the courts. But that's fairly new legislation. There hasn't been a lot of cases decided on that. But when it comes to the courts, though, when they tend to mirror what the legislation says, they tend to mirror what Congress is doing. So if Congress and other previous court precedent has been, no, you can't use arbitration or NDA to silence somebody in a case that's involving sex assault, they'll kind of keep following that. And it's like, you can't, if, you know, these allegations, if a jury believes them or anybody believes them or how the judge sees it, it's like, yeah, this looks really bad if you're WWE and Vince. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they've denied anything as far as the facts go. John Laurinaitis sent I emailed John Laurinaitis' attorney. He didn't send it to me, but he did send a statement to Post Wrestling, and, you know, he really blasted Janelle's declaration. Because Laurinaitis, if people remember, he was once a defendant in this case. Now he kind of flipped. Yeah. He provided evidence for Janelle, and he's supposed to testify. But I kind of got lost in thought there, but there's just a lot of things that's going to have to happen for all this. I just don't see how WWE is going to get out of this way. I've not seen anything where they've flatly said Janelle's lying here. We have proof that she's not. Everything's been, well, she's a jilted ex-girlfriend. You know, they gave a list of things where she sent texts where she said she loved him, the love letter story, the New York Post, stuff like that. But they've not really denied the acts that have happened. And I think that's probably going to be the really hard thing for them to do, is explain how she was fine with all this, you know. And that's the one thing I got from the declaration. I don't know if this was, maybe they wrote it this way, maybe the lawyers guided her to write this way, I don't know. But you read it, you start seeing where the trauma is starting to take hold and where that abuse mentality starts to set in, where the beginning she's kind of like, you know, I don't want to do this. And then later on, she's just kind of groveling or just dealing with it with, you know, she can't sleep, having suicidal ideation, things like that. You can kind of read it through the declaration where she's kind of getting beat down. Maybe that was the impression they were trying to make with it. I don't know. But it's compelling. I mean, it's hard to believe somebody would do these things and be fine with it, yeah. You know, or agree to having these things done to them, I should say. I mean, and Janelle's been out front about this. She was in front of the Connecticut legislature a month ago, you know, talking about how, you know, this is basically how WWE's turned her complaint against Vince into storyline fodder.
They sure as hell did with that.
And I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And I think they did it this past week, I think, too. I've highly doubt that, you know, on a PG wrestling show that, Paul Heyman's using the P word to refer to urine. And if people follow in the case, they know that Lesnar requested a video from Janelle that had her performing a certain act in the bathroom. And it's like, now all of a sudden Heyman can't stop saying that word in a ring. Maybe he only said it once. I haven't seen a clip of it. Unfortunately, I keep trying to find it on Raw's social media, but they never posted it, which is kind of weird, considering it was a Heyman promo, and they usually post all of those. But they have used this complaint for storyline fodder for a long time. It was the Liv Morgan stuff. There was the other stuff where, you know, the rumors and innuendo around Brock Lesnar. I don't know. I just, you know, the Paul Heyman from ECW never goes away, right? But yeah, it's, you know, the way they've done this for, you know, Janelle's standing up, and I think it's opened up. I mean, the grief in the internet response from the bots, the trolls, you know, the cult, and I like to call them the cheese board enthusiasts. But, you know, it's really been harsh against her, especially once she started coming out, once she started making the two public appearances. And, you know, she's spoken twice about, legislation in Connecticut that would help her in her case, and each time it's just the crazies come out of the woodwork.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's why most rapes don't go reported, because women say stuff, and a lot of times they're attacked and called a liar and like dragged through the muck. And like, I gotta give her credit for having the guts to continue this, because people can say, oh, she just wants a payoff. I don't think you go this far if you're just looking for a payoff, you know. Yeah.
Like, I mean, payoff is going to happen. She wants to take these fuckers down, right? Yeah. Because the problem is that she can't like file charges against them, because the burden of proof is so high. But whenever it's just like a civil suit, then the burden of proof is much lower. Then you're actually able to get justice that way. And that's like criminal versus civil. And BJ, correct me if I'm like out of turn. I think that's,
oh yeah. I mean, if the burden of proof in a criminal case is 99%, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. Mm-hmm. In a civil case, it's 51%.
Yeah.
So your evidence threshold for one for criminals here, your evidence threshold for civils here. But I also think there's another thing to consider, and that's just that the Connecticut really babies Vince McMahon on just about everything he does. I was covering the traffic case from last year where he rear-ended a woman doing, you know, he was ticketed for reckless operation of a vehicle driving over 85 miles per hour. He plows in the back of her BMW. Damn near center up the side of careening off the side of the hill. I spoke to the victim in his travel in this case several times in this story, and he ends up going to court. He should have had his license removed, maybe done jail time. He goes into court, they seal his files. You don't get no word of it. Then a month later, he took some probationary driving classes and he didn't even point his license. And then I asked for, you know, the dashboard camera, I asked for body camera immediately after this happened. They finally start delivering this like a month or two ago. This is a wreck that happened last summer. And this traffic case has been done for months.
Yeah.
And they have a deputy interviewing Vince and he in the back of the car. And he tells Vince, you were doing over 115 miles per hour, which would have put him immediately in jail if they would have actually charged him for what he actually did. I think that's another thing to be considered here is that, you know, without a federal case coming in here, it's hard to expect Connecticut, which seems to be in their pocket, to do much. At least that's been was pretty eye opening. The traffic case has been pretty eye opening as far as what they'll let him get away with. And it makes me wonder why there's never been state charges in the Janelle case. It just kind of blows my mind.
It's probably why civil case might be, might actually hit him because they're not going to realistically, probably not going to put an 80-year-old man in jail. I mean, they did Harvey Weinstein, but I just don't. Yeah. I think you're right. I don't think it's going to happen here. So you might as well hit him where it counts in the pocketbook, and it's going to hurt Vince, and it'll hurt Nick Khan, and it'll hurt Ari Emanuel, right?
Yeah.
I think the bigger things will be they'll want certain things done. They'll want people's names named, and I think they're going to make this a public trial.
Yeah,
they're going to make this a thing where we're going to make them come out and tell what happened and what they've done. And we're going to go through the history of the company, which, you know, everybody knows this. If you follow the history of the business, it's not very pretty. And, I think that if we do see a change in the White House, I really believe the FBI is probably going to pursue. It wouldn't surprise me if they pursued charges or another grand jury. Nobody knows what happened to it. Maybe it's still going on. I doubt it. What I was told likely happened was, the criminal case was dropped was probably because they, you know, just to get to the bones excuse, not to get to the whole politics of it, but the bones, you know, reason why this happened was, you know, they probably set when they made the, SEC settlement to pay that off and settle that probably involved getting rid of the criminal case. And that would have happened after Trump won the election in 2024. And given what's happened in that same district, Southern District in New York, with because that's where Trump was convicted, the way they've attacked that district, the DOJ, the FBI up there, the prosecutors up there, the way they've kind of like already peeled off some cases that they were going after high profile political and, you know, corporate people, you know, it would be hard to believe that wasn't the case with Vince too. You know, where there's Eric Adams, New York mayor, you know, there's rumors, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried, supposedly his parents have been paying a lot of money to Trump's campaign. And there's talks that he's going to get a pardon, you know, after he bilked millions and billions out of people. But the politics probably saved Vince in this, but I really, you know, this was what people were telling me clear back when this case started. And it was in the Wall Street Journal announced that there was a criminal investigation, was that the FBI doesn't forget. They remembered what happened in 92, 93. And the mistake they made there was they went after the steroid stuff and they didn't go after the Ring Boy stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you know, he kind of got off the clock. He managed to get off the clock because of the administration. That ain't going to make him any happier. I really think if they get the chance, they'll probably do that. I don't know. I don't see, you know, when he's being 80 years old now, the picture, they may not, but I think they'll, I, you know, just from the people that I've talked to in law enforcement, federal law enforcement that have covered these things in the past, they said they'd be very surprised if they didn't get another administration error, if they didn't give it another shot.
Yeah. That would be really interesting if because the SEC case, the Securities and Exchange Commission, that case, that was a completely separate thing. That one was kind of resolved essentially, right? That was quietly resolved. But then Everybody thought that the other case was dropped. But what you're saying is that there's been no evidence that the criminal case against Vince that was outside of the SEC was dropped.
Well, they wouldn't announce it and they wouldn't say anything about it. They would just drop it. But the things that were interesting were they had a grand jury going at the time. They were collecting evidence for at least 18 months. And the person, you know, I talked to people, I'm trying to find somebody who's, you know, I'm still working on this. I'm going to find somebody that tells me what happens with this case.
Yeah.
They don't exactly send a press release when they drop a case or anything like this, but it looked political to me. And the thing is, you just got to find the right person to talk, and it takes internal. Probably, you know, be something that'll be off the record. It'll come out eventually.
Yeah.
But it was probably the politics. What I've been told by people that cover that court, the thing that would have happened is when they settled the SEC case, when something like this happens, they settle all the federal stuff at once. So likely when they went and they made a deal for the SEC case, they were able to make a deal for the DOJ case, whoever was involved with settling that. And that's probably, that's what I feel like discussing court stuff a lot. Yeah. That's probably what happened. That's what one big time reporter told me. It's likely that's when that happens, is you'll see that if all of a sudden a criminal case disappears and they have a settlement for like a fine or anything like that, that's likely what happened. That's probably the case with what happened with Vince. But so far, I haven't seen evidence of it. That the case is, you won't see evidence of it. But, you know, Vince's side did say it was settled. Janelle's side said they haven't heard anything from the government, and she was a big part of that case and in the DOJ's case. And the only thing other than that was a mention by, a judge looking into the McDevitt's files and trying to get them. I think if it was a grand jury indictment, there would have been something on the table by now. This has been way too long, I think. I'd be surprised if something came out.
Yeah, I would too. I hate to be cynical, but I just don't ever see Vince facing justice. I think it's going to happen.
The thing is if the FBI is, they don't forget. You know, and he's also 80 years old, but it's just like, I think you're also seeing a feeling turn in the country just because of what this administration, they're sick and tired of people buying themselves out of their responsibility. I'm even seeing GOP candidates down on the ballot in the states saying stuff like, because the Epstein file situation kind of relates to that too. It's like, you know, you have all these people who are able to buy themselves out of the most horrific of crimes imaginable. And I think that's where you start to see democracy fractured. I know a lot of Republicans that can't stand the way, you know, the current administration has, and this has been something that's building, this isn't just Trump, this is building up since Enron, you know, which that was like the last big corporate, you know, corruption scandal where people actually went to prison for. It's building up since 2008. You know, it's like, why are these guys allowed to do this and they're not getting any trouble for it? They pay a fine and they act pretty jerkish about it too. And I mean, look at the United Healthcare CEO. You know, that was basically a result of this guy. He's been running this company and people, you know, they're dying because they're losing their insurance and he ends up getting shot in the back. And, you know, and people were hailing the guy that shot him as a hero. You know, it's like, there's not a lot of people that are happy with the way things are the way corporate crime is being prosecuted right now. So, I mean, things could change. I think it will change, but I don't know how long, you know, whatever long. I'm surprised Vince is still around with all the, you know, the vitamins he took and all their things that he took during his big bodybuilding phases. But you know, we'll see. I think at some point something will happen.
I hope you're right. I hope that we get enough evidence to be able to do something with this guy because he's been running roughshod for a long time, kind of running unchecked essentially forever. And unless he actually gets checked, he's going to always have this section of the world that thinks that he can do no wrong, that everybody that's ever come against him is they're the bad ones and not him, because he created their favorite television show, so they gotta praise the guy no matter what happens.
It's very, you know, it, you read stories about Vince, he bought tons of books on psychology and things like that to try to learn how to ensnare an audience and people. And if and it works to a large extent with people, you know, to me, you and JD and, you know, probably the people in this chat, it's like, who the heck would fall for this crap? You know, you can enjoy a good wrestling match without having to defend the company's owner for being a scumbag. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's this psychological thing that happens. I'll be honest. I've never met anybody in public who talks this way that people do online and on the internet due to people who are covering this case. We're just covering WWE in general. Now, I know hardcore WWE fans and artists, like, they'll talk about how much they hate Vince. You know, they can't stand Triple H either. You know, they'll watch because it's on, but that's it. They don't like the people running the company, you know. But this, you know, this cult, that's the only way I can really compare them to. It's like they're running around and...
That's the thing about Twitter. It's not real. Like, the things that we've covered this a million times over the years. It's like these big controversies that'll happen, and then in real life, nobody reacts. Nobody cares. Like, we get so, like, insulated, and the stuff that we hear here we think is important. And then, like, we don't realize how small of a reach Twitter really has. I feel Mike is right. I don't feel this guy will ever really get his comeuppance. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't know if he'll live long enough, although his mother's still alive or lived to her hundreds or some craziness like that. So I don't have any faith. I don't have any faith in the current administration.
I mean, I'll be honest. It'd be hard that anybody that's got a big chunk of money, it's hard to have faith that they'll ever be held responsible for anything they do. It's bad. I mean, Sam Altman's running this Icon for a couple years. He's out in front saying, you know, oh, when it crashes, no, I'm not going to worry because the government's going to bail me out. You know, he just did this huge scam with computer RAM, you know, and, you know, he ran up the prices on it. And then when it was largely due to his own company buying up, you know, promising to buy 60% of the RAM on the market, and then all of a sudden deciding they're not. So it's like people do these things and there's like no consequences to them. And I always tell people, they talk about Las Vegas and stuff like that and bookies and the sporting apps and things like that. And it's like Wall Street's basically, and Ian Vince is very much a Wall Street creature, just like a Trump and Jared Kushner and a lot of these people. And I'd say Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are very much Wall Street creatures as well.
Nancy Pelosi's the greatest stock trader of all time.
Yeah, isn't that, man? She's just so good. She should have went into private equity. Yeah. You know, and it's like, and they're wondering why they had a hard time getting people to vote for them when, you know, they're the face of their party's doing the same stuff. And it's like, but, you know, at some point, this is the, you know, at some point, you know, it's gonna, you know, they're not gonna be able to keep doing this. They're gonna have to fix things. It's, you know, what can't go on forever won't, you know.
Yeah.
I think you're seeing that with WWE's creative right now. It's like finally people are kind of like, the emperor has no clothes on. What's going on?
They, you know? That happens every couple of years with WWE. It happened in like Vince's final days, and like, and now it's we're seeing it with Triple H and Ari Emanuel sticking his nose in. But with Vince, I think there's a couple of different things. He's got a lot of money, and he could pay off the right people, and he could pay off Democrats just as easily. He could pay off Republicans.
Oh yeah, I mean, Cory Booker was very much a guy that's in his corner. Yeah, I got
no faith that he can't. That he's going to not be able to weasel his way out of this. Also, I think that he's a wrestling person, and like the government just doesn't care about going after wrestling people.
You know, I had discussions about that all the time with people, and it's just like I have to tell them, like, wrestling's a very, 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 very small part of the world, and a lot of people don't care about it. You know, there were certain things that people were talking about. Oh, there's a certain agent that was on Twitter, and people couldn't believe that his agency was allowing him to talk this way and all this stuff. And it's like, they don't care. You know, they probably aren't likely to care because wrestling just isn't on their radar, you know, or it's just not something they care about. They don't understand it. You know, and Vince used that to his advantage a lot. You know, he would just kick in a kayfabe mode. Like, on, I remember watching him on the HBO kind of sports investigative shows, and he would just, you know, he this worked until he did it to Bob Costas, and Costas, who actually, you know, used to announce wrestling. He knew the business really well, you know, caught him by his ass really and embarrassed him on TV. But it was like, he would just go into kayfabe Mr. McMahon character whenever he did and just make it look like everything was an act. You know, they'd have an interview with like Roddy Piper talking about how terrible he feels and his, you know, he's been depressed and suicidal for years and how bad, how bad the industry is. And they would they'd try to interview Vince live on the air and he would just kick right into character to try to throw people off. And people in mainstream media, they don't really know how to handle that. They don't know the business. That's one reason why I got back and started covering the story. It's because I remember that when it happened in the 2000s. And I also remember hearing about those allegations against Vince clear back then. That's one reason I got to doing it, is because I'm like, okay, well, I'm in a reporter on the other side. And, you know, and I understand the kayfabe part of this. The key is not to let them do it. You know, the key is not to take the bait. Yeah. And, and I think that, and I also think it's this one. I think this case has proved, they have brought him out of the shadows a bit, because the Wall Street Journal was on this, you know, Vice was on this.
I don't have faith that they care. I'm convinced the next 2 years you're going to see Vince on WWE TV and people bow to him.
I don't care. I tell you what, would not surprise me. I think that, I'm surprised they haven't brought him back already, just because they think that any publicity is good. But I think I do think that if they do, they're gonna realize the world's changed a little bit.
I think with Vince, I think in a couple of years probably. I'm not surprised they have not brought him back. I don't think they'll bring him back anytime soon. Until this case is closed, then they'll bring him back.
Yeah,
they were able to bring back Lesnar because Lesnar's not the one that's on trial here.
I've done some podcasting with Arturo and Larry over at Pro Wrestling Prescription, and I've talked to other people, and one of the things that they said probably doomed Vince more than this horrible case was the fact that when they sold the company, they didn't realize Vince had just tied WWE into these non-disclosure agreements, and how much he tied him into, this money and, these other problems they had, and that it went well beyond him. It's gone. I mean, there's still people there up and down the line that's had issues. Yeah. And Lee Fitting had issues at ESPN. Nick Khan's been around a lot of these guys, whether it was at Fox Sports or, he was as an agent, he represented a lot of them. And a lot of those guys, included the head of Fox Sports, Charlie Dixon, but I think that probably killed his chances of coming back more than anything. But it's like, I will say some of it, I think this idea the fans want him to come back, I think it's kind of trash. I saw a video where somebody said they had a welcome, thank you, Vince chant or something at the Raw on Monday. And I went and clicked the video and I listened to it, and I had it all the way up on how as loud as I could get on my phone or computer, both. And I'm like, I couldn't hear anything. It was just somebody looking for bait.
Yeah,
but I don't think there's any desire by fan. If he came back, he would get the customary big pop. But I think after a week, nobody cares.
Yeah,
I agree.
Here, BJ, we got a question here from Chad. I clicked the wrong comment. But here's the question: it says, "Sorry if I'm an idiot." Well, you're listening to this show. It doesn't speak highly of you, Chad. But no, I'm just kidding. He said, "Is the Ring Boy lawsuit settled?"
It's a great show. The Ring Boy lawsuit is not settled. It is still in court. It moved from the Baltimore County. I think it was the Baltimore County. It moved from the Maryland court, state courts, to the federal court.
Yeah.
There's been some filings in it recently too. That's still going on. They're up to eight. They're up to eight plaintiffs right now, and Linda Vince and TKO are being sued in that one. In fact, the Attorney General of Maryland just put in a request and had it granted to kind of argue before the court in this case, because that case came about because of a Child Victims Act law that had allowed people to sue for negligence and get rid of the statute of limitations in the state. And that's what allowed the Ring Boys to sue Vince, Linda, and TKO in this instance. They argued this before, and then they had it go to the Maryland Supreme Court along with about a bazillion other cases, and the Maryland Supreme Court kept that up to, they basically upheld that the Child Victims Rights Act was still was valid and constitutional. But now that they're on the federal court, they're trying to get a federal court to rule that it's not. constitutional. So that's both at the U.S. Constitution and the Maryland State Constitution. But that's where they're at right now. That was what happened like maybe a couple days before the recent developments with Janelle Grant. And the shareholder suit's also ongoing too, which is going to be kind of a zoo. I mean, the filings in it are, you know, it's all corporate stuff in the Chancery Court. So it's kind of crazy in there going to the docket. Yeah. But you know, you start looking through the course and the cases and you're like, man, this company, what a history.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty, all the way back to the Snuka case from forever, like that Irv Mushik wrote about. It's like,
yeah, crazy. It's funny. Cause, that case, I keep hearing stuff about it. Whenever stuff goes back to Vince Jr., it always goes back to Nancy Argentina. Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where
people
start looking at where things, and that's, you know, the way that looks like it had a lot of corrupt government employees that were involved in helping to hush that up. And that's another problem, you know, that goes, this wasn't something that they haven't relied on before.
We need to do a deep dive into that case, because that, if you guys have not read the Irv Mushik book, what was the name of it? It was so good. It had multiple stories in there about different wrestling scandals, but the Nancy Argentino Jimmy Snuka murder case was the one that was the headlining story of that book. I'll think of it and I'll tweet it out later, but we should really do a deep dive.
He did great work on the Benoit story.
He sure does. He's a great writer. Stan Mushnick's nephew. We got a question here from Lady B. He said, I keep wondering if Vince shows up at the Hall of Fame for Stephanie, despite their strange relationship, I assume she'll mention him. She's savvy. I don't think she will.
I bet she mentions him.
You think so?
I do. I don't think he'll be there.
No, he won't.
All this going on, I don't think he'll be there, but I bet she'll mention him. Because she's pretty, I don't think she's that savvy, Mike. I think she's kind of,
you don't think so? Okay.
No, I don't. I think she's kind
of. See, that's the thing people don't realize is that they think because these guys haven't gotten in trouble that they're smart. That doesn't necessarily, being rich doesn't necessarily mean you're smart.
Do you recall the September 11th SmackDown where she compared the Twin Towers falling to her family getting sued by the government and all that? Like, I mean,
Exhibit One. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I reject my motion.
The thing is you expect people that have found all this success in life or made a lot of money or did well in private equity or became corporate raiders or got to the big time in politics that they're smart. I mean, a lot of it times is just they had the right people and they're willing to do things that most normal people aren't willing to do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you see that, that's kind of the behavior that determines. Now they can go one of two ways. You can be you're a sociopath and you can go to jail, or maybe you end up in the White House. Who knows? But I mean, I hate to be that pessimistic and, you know, about things, but it's just like the more and more I see things playing out, the more things I read about situations, it's like, yeah, these people won't really have. I mean, look at some of the current things we're experiencing around the world right now. You don't need exactly to be a rocket surgeon to get into these messes, right?
If you're a sociopath born with a silver spoon, you learn to be very successful in life.
Yeah.
Because you can't fail. Like, look, we see it time and time again. These people just don't fail. Like, DJ, I've been talking about this last couple of weeks, and we talked about how TKO didn't understand kind of what they were getting into, and they picked up WWE. And now with Ari Emanuel sticking his nose into the main stuff with WrestleMania this year, and them not being terribly happy with ticket sales and stuff like that, I've been operating under this assumption that, and I think this is all for all major corporate conglomerations. I think these things are all not long for this world, just based on history. How long do you think TKO as an entity, you know, the merger of UFC and WWE, stays a thing? When it first happened, I was thinking a decade. I'm thinking less than that now. I would be surprised if it goes 5 years, to be quite frank.
I was told, you know, the feelings that I know some people in the business world had that follow these people pretty closely and, you know, invest in a lot of it, and people that were told me, you know, things about, you know, the Warner Brothers and, you know, and all that, you know, their feeling was that when the Saudi WrestleMania show was going to happen, they were probably going to announce their purchase of WWE or TKO completely from Endeavor. And there's some things that, you know, I don't know if that would have happened or not, but it's just, but it makes sense. I mean, the Saudis wanted in on this. They were, from the shareholder lawsuit, they're one of four entities that wanted involved and wanted to buy WWE. I think that the only thing it might prevent, I think they may be backing off just because the Saudi fund that they're using for all this, the public investment fund, has been taking a beating over the last couple of years, especially after the EA Sports purchase. And I think another thing, this is where I still see the Paramount deal happening either, is because it's just one, they've already taken a beating in that too. You with Iran, there you have the Strait of Hormuz shut down, so all those sovereign wealth funds that are helping out that purchase, you know, and you know, would be interested in maybe helping out on a WWE or TKO purchase, which, you know, they're it's gone from bad to worse. You know, I think the Saudis would have been the most likely. I think at this point, it's like you got to look at this and think, okay, we're getting over $250 million a year from ESPN for pay-per-views or PLEs or whatever you want to call them. We got $1 billion a year from Netflix. It's like, how much more money can we get out and beat out of this? And that's the mentality. And it's like, you know, they want to sell on top. I think if you start seeing a lot of layoffs and a start of, you know, and a lot of synergy, then you're going to see them. Maybe that's probably the time that they're thinking of trying to dump this thing. But that's kind of, it's funny because the thing is, and I think people are realizing is, that's what kind of got WCW and their creative downspin in trouble, was all the corporate entanglements and problems like that and other issues. Of course, it didn't help that Bischoff was an idiot and Vince Russo was a bigger idiot. But you look at what's happening now in WWE, that's the same stuff that happened with WCW in the late 90s, early 2000s. And that's kind of the advantage Tony Khan and AEW has, because they're private. Tony, this is his company. He does what he wants. You know, I see people complain a lot, you know, especially at Meltzer and Sean Ross Sapp, because you don't put out as many spoilers about AEW as you do WWE. That's crap. You're trying to hurt WWE's products. Like, no, it's because there's a lot more plumbing that things have to go through over there, and things leak. Where in AEW, it's just Tony telling people right before they go out what they're going to do. And he's notorious for hating spoilers and match results and surprises getting spoiled.
Well, and so, the people that were leaking in that company now work for WWE again.
Yeah, that's okay. Did you see I gotta ask you, did you see MJF on the Ryan Fitzpatrick's podcast?
I did not, but I, you know what,
okay. Let's take a look at it, because they do a name association game with him. It's pretty
funny. There's a
quote
when he got to CM Punk. I was like, wow.
Yeah, there's a quote being attributed to MJF that I want to talk to you guys about. So let's move off of the Vince thing. We'll put a I think we covered that pretty well. It got a little dark. Thank you, BJ, for doing that. Now let's have a fun conversation. So I want to get both of you guys' thoughts on this. MJF was on a podcast. Can't remember if it was Ryan Fitzpatrick or what, but he's doing a lot because he's promoting Dynasty. He's doing a great job of it too. He's the one main eventer in AEW that actually does all the podcasts, and he's out there promoting the brand. I can't say that for other guys that have been in that spot or other EVPs that have been in that spot. MJF actually goes out there and works his ass off and actually promotes the brand. But he has this idea, and I fucking love this idea, and I wanna see what you guys think. He wants Tony Khan and AEW to produce a Wednesday Night Wars documentary. And he wants to have a documentary about how they defeated NXT. And he's like, hey, a lot of those guys, hold on, that's my cat's ass.
He wants
a documentary because they have, like, you know, Adam Cole, and they have, you know, Kyle O'Reilly and Swerve Strickland, all those people that were in NXT. What do you guys think about them producing a documentary about the Wednesday Night Wars like the WWF did after they bought WCW?
I don't like it. Okay. I don't. As a documentary guy, I don't like it. I feel like you're kicking a hornet's nest right now when things are actually pretty going good for your company. Like, I think you need to just leave that alone and let it die. And
this would work. I would be for this.
Okay.
Two circumstances.
Okay. So one, 2-1. Okay.
It's complete. Okay. If it's a straight up attempt at a documentary, or it's whatever the Pravda version of the documentaries were so terrible. And so there was lie. There were, you know, I mean, it was like a re-education camp on a streaming device. If they did it completely kayfabe,
yes,
or they did it completely unserious, Yeah, like they just made up stuff that happened. Like they make up stuff about happened, or they bring in like I mean, remember Jericho? Right when he was in AEW, they brought in like they did a documentary about his childhood growing up, and it was just they had like Virgil on to talk about, you know, when they were hanging out on the street and they grew up on the tough streets of Winnipeg and that kind of stuff. They did something like that. It'd be amazing. Let's let the BTE guys be the BTE guys on it. If they did something like that, it'd be funny. Yeah. Or if they did it completely, or if they try to do it completely kayfabe. That would be amazing, but it's like if they try to do it straight up. But
if they did it, I
can't imagine for a minute version. Max would. Yeah, but I can understand why Max would have that feeling, because he'd probably is like, you know what, 10 years ago we whooped their ass. Why?
Yeah,
you know, let's pee on their tree like they do to everybody else.
What I would really like is I'd really like Guy Evans to come and do a version of, because I really like Nitro. I got interviewed for Beyond Nitro. I plug that all the time. I would really like for something like that to happen with the Wednesday Night Wars, like an actual book, something similar to like The Late Shift. Amazing
book. Oh, The Late Shift is probably one of the great TV books ever made. And the time, TV movie, the HBO movie of it's
pretty good.
Fabulous. Yeah,
it's pretty good. So I would like to see something like that done about the Wednesday Night Wars, like a real, like a scholarly look at like what actually happened behind the scenes, like talking to the people that were involved. I don't think it'll ever happen because it's wrestling and everybody's such a carny mark. But I mean,
I don't know. I mean, how many WCW documentaries and books have we seen though?
Tons. But I mean,
WCW. Is a cat invading your video? Is a cat coming in?
That's a child.
He's on spring breaks.
I'm ready for my dog to assassinate me live on here, just because the animals are going. The animals and the children are going crazy, man. They're taking over.
We got all the run-ins happening. You know what I really love about it though is that he takes such pride in AEW defeating the third brand for the WWE. It's like
yeah, but they tried though.
They did.
Like,
they
really tried. Like they put people on that show, and like they really, people they could say now like, oh, it was the third brand, but I mean like the first episode they put Finn Balor out there. Like they actually put effort into it.
Charlotte Flair was on there a lot. Becky Lynch.
I'm a steal from Joe Lanza.
Undertaker. Right,
that era of NXT was selling out basketball arenas.
Yeah.
The stand and deliver they just did 1,500 people in St. Louis. Like, people gave a shit about that era of NXT. So you you can't talk out of both ends of your mouth when it comes to that.
Yeah. I like the whole thing. I like pettiness in wrestling. I like tribalism in wrestling. I want people to hate each other. I think it's good for my enjoyment, for my entertainment. It's good for our show. I like to make fun of people that take it way too seriously. They're pro wrestling companies. These are not sports teams. Like at the end of the year, you don't win a championship. All you win is an observer award, and you can take your observer award and $8 and get a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Like that's all you get at the end of the year. So,
pretty much.
Yeah, you get nothing out of this. Let's see. Lady B says, MJF also said in that interview that 8-match pay-per-view should be the magic number for AEW. I fucking wholeheartedly agree. 8-match pay-per-views under 4 hours. That's like for 43-year-old Mike, that's what we have to do for sure. I like that.
I'll take as many great matches as they can get, as long as it's not affecting the other matches around it. I'm not gonna ever complain about more for my money. Especially when WWE is giving out 6-hour 4-match pay-per-views. It's like, I think that's kind of what you see them so loaded for. One, there's not as many. Two, it's like, okay, how do we really show we're different? Oh, we'll just have a lot more pay-per-views and we'll have people with color going over and, you know, and we'll actually have good matches and we don't crap, you know, you're not listening to the comment. It's funny. I've been trying to break. I don't know if you guys have noticed. That's the question I like to ask you. But if you really noticed how WWE style is, a lot of it, you have these long entrances and the commentators, the videos tell the story. And then the commentators kind of take over the story. And the wrestlers are kind of like almost a secondary thing in the ring while the commentators are kind of telling you what it's going on, what you should listen to and all that. It's not like you'd expect with a traditional wrestling broadcast where the wrestlers are doing everything and the commentators are talking about it like it's a sport event. I mean, am I wrong in that? Or you got,
you might be right. I haven't watched a full show in forever. I watch mainly clips. I've been forced to watch
some pay-per-views at work, but it's funny because even the WWE people are just like, this is tight.
It's terrible. So, I mean, that's why they're in the spot they're in now. They have to get all these celebrities now to push the pay-per-view because they've downplayed wrestling so much.
Yeah.
That there's really not much else. Like, if you take wrestling away from professional wrestling, what have you got? You have like some late stage WCW stuff. And that's kind of where what you're looking at now with a with WWE and especially this WrestleMania. Like, I just, they don't care really about the in-ring stuff, like, which is funny because whenever they have like a good match, the fans go ape shit. But they educate their fans to not care about the in-ring product. So you have to have all these things. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't care for it, so I don't watch it, so I don't have a good opinion.
But I'll you know, Arturo, the guy I've been talking with on Larry's podcast, mentioned this, and he's been in Vegas a lot. I don't know if you guys have, but his word to everybody is with Mania is if you really want to go, do not buy a ticket.
No,
because they likely a lot of the sales they have now are comps, and they're going to be giving those away if you just show up in Vegas, and they're close to it because they did the ticket. They did the ticket matchup with the Las Vegas NASCAR race, where if you got the NASCAR ticket, you got a Mania ticket. They dropped ticket fees, I think, on Thursday or Friday. I mean, it's kind of strange because they're like, they got 40,000 for both nights, right? But at the same time, it's like, man, this reeks desperate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still going to be a huge gate.
Well, but they have time, to.
It's like, man, it's like
they have to announce a bigger number than the year before, or else it's going to make it seem like it's a failure when that's not actually true.
but like,
that's the way they see it.
Yeah. You know, and I think that's kind of pales off on people that they're used to seeing that thinking from WWE, and that's why they judge AEW based on that thinking. Like, oh, you're not putting 12,000 in that same building as you did last time. How can you say it was a good show even though the gate was good?
Yeah. Which is odd because the whole history of WWE is nothing but fluctuations in business, which is weird because you've got that's another thing I think is TKO is not going to like this eventually, because you've got people running this business that don't really understand the wrestling business. Even Nick Khan came in when WWE was on their upswing. I don't know if these guys really get that pro wrestling is very boom bust. Like, you have hot and cold periods constantly. And there's times that, like, Joe Lanza, I'm going to steal from him again, said this. There's a lot of wrestling fans that come in, they see the stories, they kind of get their fill of it, and they move on.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Yep. That's a lot of people with wrestling. And I don't know if these companies, they think of it like movies. Like, oh, you got
see, I think WWE, I'm sorry. No. I think WWE still got the, you know, casual fan mindset where they're looking to grab somebody, like, you know, get that Andy Kaufman or Hulk Hogan moment, or, you know, or that Monday or that Steve Austin moment. I think AEW's vision of this is, if we get the sickos and the hardcores, they're going to watch all the time. Yeah. We market to them. We give them what they want. We don't worry about the cycles. And I got to tell you, that's a pretty smart way of thinking, especially with the way homes have disappeared in cable, because that got them a huge TV deal. And that marks a huge difference between them and WWE. And I think that's where people don't understand and that also puts them into that number two slot where they're not worried about being number one.
Yeah.
You know, where that's where your mistakes get made.
We've talked about that since the show got launched, is that AEW needs to stay as far away from what WWE does as possible and just be the alternative and be okay being number two.
I mean, like,
there's nothing wrong with Pepsi.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Pepsi fan. I like it better than Coke, but I like what you said. That's perfect. Because if you look at when they had problems, this is when they were trying to most emulate WWE. You know, it was when they were doing the crash TV kind of aspects I mean, I think they still try to do it too much. I'd rather see almost everything cut in a ring. And I think they're doing more and more of that. But I mean, you go back, I also think that you got to give Tony Khan a little bit of credit here on one thing, which is when they really got bad, they put they did Danielson and Moxley, and they let Moxley go dark, and they had to do a reset for a good 6 months, where it was just the Death Riders beating up lower card baby faces, because you had all these tweener guys who kind of lost where they were with the crowd. You had to get them set before they got set. And a lot of people would not have had the patience for that. You could not do that in WWE right now. I think Triple H could have done that 3 or 4 years ago, because of where they were. If they had a situation like that, I don't think he could get away with doing that now, where he could take 6, 7, 8 months and say, look, we got to sit there and write this out, but we're going to get back up to here by All In Texas, and we're going to be keep going off that, and then we're going to keep going off that. I don't think WWE is in a position where they could do a reset like that, and they have done them in the past. And that's a rough thing, because like you said, they don't, the TKO doesn't understand this business, and
no.
And at least the storytelling aspect of it. And you know, they're and I think a lot of it's they've gotten into their own product so much, you know, it's like, it's so insular. And I mean, you talk to people from there in the locker room, I think that's why, you know, finally AEW figured out, you know, we can't keep bringing in people from over there and thinking they're going to work here, because it's just it's two completely different things. And, you know, it's worked out for AEW. I also think WWE also believes they can sit around and wait for the next hot AEW free agent. They'll offer them a ton of money. They'll come over and they'll get saved like Cody saved them.
Well, and I think they're banking on Jericho, and Tony was able to get the deal done. Jericho, God bless him, was playing both sides for a while, which good for him if he was doing that.
This is stuff I've talked about with, you know, on the Jericho thing, is I don't think he was as close to leaving as people thought. I think he was thinking about it. I think the biggest factor for him was the way the crowd turned on him. And also the fact of the match quality he has to have in AEW, where his body's at right now. Because you're looking at a guy in the mid-50s. I think those were the biggest factors for him in AEW. Because you got to remember, him and Triple H hate each other's guts.
Yeah.
And I think that he did not trust them with his career and how it was going to close out going back. I think it was still tempting for him because, like, okay, that's a better style for him. It's more suited to him because it's more promo-heavy. The matches aren't quite as demanding athletically. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I got to worry about trusting this guy who's been my mortal enemy since 1999, you know, where they have worked together well in periods there. But I, you know, talking to people was like, I would start digging in. I said, where's Jericho really going to WWE? And they'd be saying, I mean, almost to the word I was hearing from people that, yeah, he's not really as close to this as people think. And he's still on the AEW roster page, because when you see him go off the roster page, you'll know he's going.
Yeah.
And he never left it.
No, and that's the thing, too. I think he kind of worked it, letting people think he was going to go.
And oh, yeah.
It worked good to his benefit. Like I said, I think he also got to look at AJ and John Cena's retirement runs. And, like, neither one of them were great. And I don't think that he really wants to. The story that their side puts out is that there was a retirement run proposed, and he just wasn't too into the idea of doing a retirement run.
He sees himself as Mick Jagger. Yeah. Oh, I got a man. I have a comment here that I wanted to get to. Heat is on. Says, I think the partnership between AEW and JCW is going to set the world on fire. Tony and Russo, let's go. Vince or Tony Khan is a legitimate fan of Juggalo Championship Wrestling booked by Vince Russo, and I thought that was the greatest revelation. And,
well, where'd you hear this at?
Tony Khan.
Was this on April 1st?
No. He said it openly, and he wants to go on Vince Russo's podcast, and it just got reported by Fightful that it's legit. Like, it's happening. Like, good. He wants to talk to Russo.
The one thing I do like is he's pretty honest about how he feels about the wrestling business. Which is like, it's ruined my life. I can't stand it. Which, and I'm glad he says that, because everybody else is talking about, you know, but I'll do this for this. I'm willing to die for this business.
He hates it so much, but he just can't leave it.
I can't make it. I mean, he's basically, you know, basically he doesn't flat out say this, but he does say it, which is, I can't make money doing anything else. It's the only reason I'm here, you know, but I hate it. And I kind of respect that a little bit.
I don't have a lot of affinity for him.
Book's really revealing about Russo. You should read the Run Books biography if you want to learn some more about Russo.
Here's what I will say about him is he doesn't like the status quo, and he always is trying to do something that is different than what's happening in the norm and in the mainstream. A lot of it sucks, but at least he's trying to do something different. And I feel like a lot of the stories that we're seeing on any, pick a TV show, they're very paint by numbers shit that you've been seeing all the time. Vince Russo at least like tries to do something different. Like, he has his wrestlers in concussion protocol and he's doing all kinds of different things like that versus, I think that's honestly a great idea.
There's some reasons for that too, but you know, the way he has treated, he somehow he managed to book women even worse in WCW than WWE did at the time. Of course, yeah. WWE got there a couple years later. But yeah, I'm going to say something, and a lot of people don't like this, but I think the way Insane Clown Posse has supported the wrestling business, I think they deserve a lot of credit because they make all this money. They got this huge music fandom, and they managed, I don't know how many retired wrestlers they've helped and given cash to, kept working. And I mean, they've probably done more for retired wrestlers than WWE ever has or any other wrestling company.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, I mean, just what they've been able to do with, you know, I mean, putting Greg Valentine on her Fuse TV show or, you know, other things like that. It's just like, you know, it's just, I think I really admire that about him. You know, I don't like the music, but hey.
BJ Bethel, confirmed Juggalo.
No.
Yeah. I want to.
BJ's he's firmly in the trench of dad rock, I guess is what they would call it now. But
yeah. All right. I'm going to end it on this, guys. This is from Sean Sidor. I guess Tony's thing is now just being super nice. Tony's a super nice guy, and I think all these fraud podcasters, all they ever wanted was either a job or for Tony to validate them and to talk to them, and now he's willing to talk to them, and I think they're starting to change their tune on Tony Khan, and that's smart. Look, and I have that same philosophy. There's been people that have like tried to excoriate me on Twitter, and if I'm just nice to them and like we have a discussion, it just stops. And then there's been other people that are like complete dicks on Twitter, and like we just end up having this conversation, and like, and now we're like friends. Like there's people out there that are like super mean, but I'm nice to them and they're nice to me back, and it's like a little decent thing. I think that is the way to go. I think, you know, love your enemies. You know, today's Easter. Love your enemies, kill them with kindness. Try to be as nice as humanly possible, and things tend to go well for you. I have to get off the air.
Sorry.
It's 11:30. I have to get up at 5 a.m. I love you guys. BJ Bethel, thank you so much for being here. JD, I'm sorry your Twitter got stolen. Maybe one day you'll be back.
You stole JD's Twitter. That's going to be the story of the week.
Okay, yeah. Sarah.
All right, guys. That's going to do it for us this time. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain, from the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-made, no rain.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.